Patrick, you shouldn't talk to me.
I thought we were doing a Flying Nun podcast.
Find better company.
Well, geez. Okay.
There's better people to know.
Jeez. Are there any less pessimistic things to say, Nick?
Sorry, man. I just don't want to end up like Rambo.
Get shot by the lane, Verlaine. Okay, here we are, folks. It's Thursday of Flying Nun Week. It's been intense so far on Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Patrick Foster. With me
is Nick Scalera.
Nick, thank you again for doing this.
Thank you for giving me the chance to go on and on about these guys.
This has been awesome. It's really been great. I think it's a milestone here on Rock in the Suburbs. You rock the suburbs, Nick, but of a different state, right? You rock the suburbs of D.C. also, but the Maryland side.
The Maryland, yeah. Uh-huh. We're the northern contingent of rocking the suburbs.
That's right.
Silver Spring, Maryland.
All right. There you go. Bud Verge is around there as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a neighbor.
Yeah. The hometown of Bud Verge and Nick. So it's awesome. We got to all get together up at Camden Yards here this summer when things get nice. I'm sure we can talk to Bud about that, and hopefully Bud's enjoying this this Flying Nun week. Now today we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk about the influence of Flying Nun as it's kind of spread mainly to America, right?
Yeah, definitely. We referred to this a little bit before. Not a ton of traction in the UK for a lot of weird reasons. Probably the music that was going on, and also a little bit of cultural superiority or something on that order.
So,
funnily enough, the Bats, Paul Keane, talks about the fact that the biggest hit they ever had was in France. They had a song, an album, one of their albums, I think The Law of Things, which was their attempt to be sort of a more produced hit album, actually stayed in the French charts for like 30 weeks.
Did it really? That is so bizarre.
So they're big in France. You don't hear that too often.
No, you don't.
But not really anywhere else. But that being said, what we're going to talk about now, though, is that there was a big impact on the American indie scene in the 80s.
Absolutely.
Particularly with a lot of the independent labels that we know and love. Flying Nun was a bit of a template, I think, for how you run an indie label.
It was, and broke a lot of ground. And as I was saying at one point, I think it might have been on our intro Monday show, the sound that they got off that magical four-track machine or these kind of DIY things, and the fact that they did it themselves was really empowering, you know, for somebody like me who liked to mess around in their, you know, basements of their parents' friends and just play guitar and try to figure stuff out.
Right, yeah. And it's, you know, some of the, you know, there's folks in America that essentially did the Roger Shepard thing, right?
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
Right.
So Jonathan Poneman, of co-founder of Sub Pop, big fan of the early Flying Nun stuff, you know, really it was sort of like, he has an interesting quote where he talks about his vision of what Dunedin must be like, beautiful, remote, and crawling with great bands. Which I think is what we both thought
exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so another sort of, you know, acolyte of the Dunedin sound, at, you know, the head of Sub Pop Records, hugely influential label in American music. You know, other examples, there are many. Well, I'll just sort of name check a few, and it might not be too surprising. Pavement, Neutral Milk Hotel, Jeff Magnum specifically, Superchunk, we referred to a little bit later. We'll get into that. REM actually, you know, sort of name checked Flying Nun at some point.
Yeah.
And I think the Chills might have opened for them at some point or another.
I think that's very possible. The interesting thing about what we're talking about here, though, if you think of it, folks, from the REM perspective, when Chronic Town came out in 1981, or the Hiptone single 1981, whatever it was, that's right around the time the first Clean stuff was coming out too. So those were very much parallel, you know, movements. But you think about them, and I'm sure at the very beginning, REM had no idea. It was, you know, none of those records were starting to filter over until the mid 80s or something like that, right?
Right.
But think about that. You know, that's kind of incredible. That's when this started, and the guitar, you know, and garage rock in the 60s were important influences, but they came out so different. And, yeah, I can hear that, you know, and I always thought, you know, REM had such great taste, you know, in, yeah. in the things they covered and the mm-hmm. way they did it.
Yeah, and I think that you know, we get back to the sort of, we talk about the jangle guitar thing,
yeah.
and you know, REM clearly was working with the same palette with the sort of Birds references and the and mm-hmm. in a, you know, completely different continent, other side of the world, but I think they had some recognition that some of the Flying Nun bands were also sort of operating in that same mm-hmm. in that same genre, that same space. Another thing that, you know, Chris Knox, we talked a lot about Chris yeah. Knox. Just a beloved figure, like in the U.S. as much as it is in the U.K. Someone that is just, his songs have been covered by many American bands. Mm-hmm. And we'll hear some of that. There's also sort of the tragic story about Chris Nunn. Chris Knox in 2009 mm-hmm. had a stroke.
He did.
Right. And lost the ability to speak, I believe. An amazing group of American artists got together, and also New Zealand artists,
yeah.
so folks from all over the world, to do a tribute album from Chris Knox, and really attest to the sort of influence of Chris Knox. And to me, it goes beyond the music with Chris Knox. It's the mentality. It's the do it yourself. It's the art infused
yeah.
way of making music that really had an influence that's sort of far and wide. In fact, and maybe we should play this now. I don't know how big a fan you are of Neutral Milk Hotel. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Some people
huge
are
fan.
To die for.
Yeah,
I mean, made that one sort of amazing album that's so meaningful to people. Of course, we know Magnum went into seclusion for a long
yeah.
period.
Yeah.
You know, several years. He kind of came out for this Chris Knox tribute album.
He did.
Hadn't been heard from forever.
It was the first moment. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And subsequently, he has toured with Neutral Milk, and although there doesn't seem to be any new music coming out, or if there is any, we're not hearing about it.
No, the third Neutral Milk Hotel album remains legendary.
Right, yeah. right. But he, you know, he actually appears in public now, mm-hmm. you know, and an interesting tribute to Chris Knox. He did a version of Sign the Dotted Line.
Yeah.
Let's descend through fog and rain and see if we can find the same way out of this small mess. Not as if we'd lose our lives or be impaled by carving knives just yet. No, not unless we sign the dotted line, so everything will turn out fine. Let's just discard what makes us tick and act as if we're really thick and slow. And lick the sh** of which they stand until it shines. Let's go away to somewhere new where people haven't got a clue and blend into the crowd.
Amazing cover.
It is.
You can really hear his vocal influence on that too. It's really great.
I didn't really put two and two together too much between Chris Knox and Jeff Magnum, but wow. I mean, that whole, and I guess some of the other artists in this sort of Neutral Milk, you know, they're very DIY,
yeah,
right? That,
absolutely.
What is it called? The Motel 6 or what is that weird state?
Elephant 6 Collective.
There we go. You know, there's a lot of folks, you know, just sort of playing weird instruments
yeah.
and recording things in the basement or whatever. So, yeah, you could really see it, a straight line from Chris Knox to Magnum, without a doubt.
Without a doubt, yeah. I was lucky enough to see Chris a couple of times, and as legendarily reported, I once saw him play at an in-store record store release thing, and he pulled down someone's pants who was in the audience.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Not his own.
No, not someone his own. Else. Someone okay. else's. And, he had one of those, you know, early headsets, you know, the Sammy Hagar kind of mic, right? And he just was walking around and just nice. To keep people on edge.
Nice.
Yeah, it was beautiful. But that was great. Really, really nice. One thing I want to mention, too, that came to my mind is I'm not sure if you're familiar with Barbara Manning, singer-songwriter. She's done a lot of stuff, and she's always kind of been her, you know, in some ways, like Flying Nun. She's kind of followed her own path, you know, kind of done her own thing and shifted bands and done a lot of stuff. She was in a band early on called 28th Day. She was in a band called World of Pooh. She had a band called the SF Seals that did some music about baseball and were on Matador for a little while. And in 1987, I believe, is the year she went, oh, 97, I'm sorry. She traveled to New Zealand with John Convertino and Joy Burns of Giant Sand and Calexico and collaborated with a lot of these figures that we've been talking about. Graham Downs, Robert Scott, David Mitchell, David Kilgore, Chris Knox was on it. And the album was called New Zealand in New Zealand, and it was released in 1999. And it's a really cool record. Let's hear a little bit of a song called Whatever I Do Is Right / Wrong.
Whatever I say, it's right. Whatever I do, it's right. Whatever I do, whatever I say, it's always right. It's always right. Whatever I do is wrong. Whatever I say is wrong. Whatever I say, whatever I do, it's always wrong. It's always wrong. I'll take it now, I'll pay you later. I'll take it now, I'll pay you later. I'll take it now.
So there's Barbara doing her version of a clean song. Whatever
like
I do is right.
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, with a little twist of her own. And that is David Kilgore playing piano on that
wow.
recording, too. So, big fan of Barbara. She once sent me and some guys that played music with a postcard, and that made us really happy.
Hey, doesn't take much sometimes.
No, it really doesn't. Not for me.
Right. So, let's talk a little bit about Stephen Malkmus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pavement fame. Mm-hmm. Now, he famously said in some interview that he basically copped the melody from Death and the Maiden for one of his songs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which song
sure
that
which
is.
Either.
I'm not sure which one it is, but
he copped it pretty well. If it was.
Right. I don't recall which one, but nevertheless, big fan of the Flying Nun scene,
mm-hmm.
Cites them often in interviews. And, of course, that it's not a surprise that he actually did a cover of Death and the Maiden.
Yep.
Was that for the Knox album? No.
I'm not sure.
Not sure when it came out.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing about these bands that are covering the Flying Nun bands is the influences are so strong and almost sound like them.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know,
well, that's,
and so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so on our, I know you guys have talked about cover music quite a bit in the past, you know, and mm-hmm. the criterion of, are they too close on the nose
well,
or not?
Yeah,
sometimes,
it's,
yes.
It's interesting. Right. Yeah. Well, and many of them seem to be, at least a lot of the ones I've heard, are just kind of love letters to those records. You
right.
know what I mean? It's like, this is so great. It's so fun to play. I got to
do it. They don't
want
to deviate
yeah.
too much from it.
Yeah. Reminds me of, and I may have talked about this on our podcast at one point, but once Mission of Burma had a live album called The Horrible Truth About Burma, and on it they cover 1970 by the Stooges, and right before they start it they say, we just got to play this song because we gotta.
Right,
that's
yeah.
how I, you know, that's
yeah,
some of the
right.
the vibe I get from some of these, you know, these covers too.
All right, you going out there? The red light's on or whatever.
Just too obscure for me. have taken will look like. And death in the maiden.
Now that one's got a unique twist.
Yeah, it does. I definitely. Like it. He put a little spin on it, which is great. But you know, it's also it's useful to, you know what the actual words are.
Oh,
to
yeah,
hear his version. Yeah. He sings it a little more cleanly than Graham Downs of the Verlaines does.
Didn't run him over. And that is from a record called Under the Influence, 21 Years of Flying Nun Records.
Okay.
That was released in 2002 with a whole bunch of people on it, including, you know, many of the New Zealand bands. Garage Land, who he mentioned, I think, off air. The Clean, Chris Knox appears, Graham Downs. So it's really cool.
Excellent. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Great. So last on the list here, but certainly not least, I'm going to maybe talk about Superchunk a little bit. Superchunk follows the Flying Nun script in a lot of ways. I mean, not least of which they have their own label.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Right? So Mac and Laura sort of founded, Merge Records. Mm-hmm. And, similar mentality, sort of curating bands they like, putting them out there. Also released Neutral Milk Hotel.
Yeah, that's right.
which has helped the bottom line quite a bit.
And have signed
Arcade Fire as well.
Yeah, that's right. And actually signed the Clean, right? And put out a couple of their records.
Right. Yep. And I think it's no accident that they actually put out a version of Anthology. It's actually a sort of a supersized version of Anthology that came out in Merge Records that's got almost everything the Clean did in that early period.
That's right. It's and if you haven't heard the Clean, folks, that's
So check that out. I think I mentioned before that Jim Wilbur of Superchunk was someone I knew in college, and I know he was also a fan of the Flying Nun bands, and we were playing them on the college radio station, and so it's great to sort of hear them, kind of paying tribute to them. And in fact, they've done it three or four times. I found three or four occasions of them covering. They did a version of the Chill song. I'm trying to remember which one it was, but it's a very it's a bit out of character, for Superchunk to play this. It's one of the more delicate Chill songs.
Oh, interesting.
And they also do Lying in State by the Verlaines, which is much more in their power.
It's right up their alley.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So they do sort of a rip-roaring version of that. Why don't we listen to that?
Yeah. Let's do it. There's an occasion in which the words are less distinct.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a great, great version. It really moves.
Rips.
But although I got to say, though, not strumming as fast as Graham Downs.
No, probably not.
Superchunk is fast.
Yeah,
they're not that fast.
That comes from a release called Incidental Music 1991 to 1995 that came out. And it also has, I'm not sure if you've ever heard this, Nick, you ever heard Superchunk's cover of 100,000 Fireflies by the Magnetic Fields?
I have not.
Oh, that's lovely. That's an amazing thing.
And I think we finally tracked down during the break that they did a version of Night of Chill Blue by the Chills,
and
which is sort of a soft, mysterious song, which is odd.
Beautiful
Superchunk
song. And it's on the same record. So there you go. You've got all the Superchunk stuff there.
Excellent. So that's all I've got.
Yeah. And so hopefully, what I'm hoping too is that the influence that we've kind of laid out here, but also the music, more importantly, on the first 3 days that we played here on Flying Nun Week, will lead others to kind of understand, hey, I'm listening to this Flying Nun stuff. I can hear that in another band maybe that we didn't mention, right?
Right,
you need to get in touch with us, folks, listeners.
Yes, because we need to know everything.
That's right. We're not going to rest.
Right.
Nick watches Tall Dwarfs videos before he goes to bed, so he's going to be up anyway.
Exactly.
Do that. Get in touch with us. You can email us, rocketsuburbspod.com. You can find our website, silverfly.com, where you're going to see my and Nick's at least 10 favorite, or some of our Flying Nun songs we like right now. You can call us. That's really the best way. We want your voice on the show. And Jim apparently sends people a sticker.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't, but I'm glad he does. And I have one on my car, so I must have called in at one point. I think I mentioned I call in and just weep at times. So it's very sad.
Good but relief.
Yeah. That number is 612-440-1984. Thank you, Nick. And you listen to the show
every single day.
Every single day. That's right. Nick, I'm really looking forward to wrapping this up because you're going to talk about where Flying Nun is now.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to end, but we want to get to Friday, and I want to hear about some of these cool bands.
Right.
Yeah. I know at some point you mentioned to us the Courtneys, and I think that's going to be one of the things you'll talk about.
So, definitely. Yeah. I got 4 or 5 interesting Sweet. Choices. We'll go through those. Flying Nun is alive.
Yeah.
Not just in us no. old guys with a lot of records.
That's
but,
right.
But out there in the real world, there are young folks making Flying Nun records right now, and some of them are really amazing. And so we'll take a listen to those next.
I can't wait to learn about
Friday.
It. All right. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
You know, there's a lot of folks, you know, just sort of playing weird instruments.